Okay, it's been a while. We're back at Hamsterdam. We have so much quack to talk about. I'm almost tempted to break this up into three parts, but that seems a little ridiculous at times because that would be so frustrating for anybody to listen to.
The Sling and Quack trilogy?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we wouldn't make, like, the first part of the trilogy, like, the rebooted version of another part, like, episode 7 to episode 4.
Yeah, we would actually go in order.
Yeah, we would actually do things like a normal person. We have so much to talk about.
So many activities to go over.
Yeah, so basically, my absence from Addicted to Quack has been because of some professional type things that have just been taking up a lot of time. So, but good news, I'm back, hopefully for a while. I'm psyched. It's good. I'm glad. Maybe the most impressive thing so far is Oregon Ducks basketball.
Yeah.
Pac-12 champs.
Well, number 9 in the country, and their record is so good. The last time it was this good, footage was not in color, and they won a national championship.
Ooh. Which means national championship is on the way in black and white.
Yes.
Okay. What do you think is more likely? If this was the beginning of the basketball season, Oregon is a 2 seed in Pac-12 champions, or that a police officer would withhold a possible murder weapon from the O.J. Simpson case.
Oh man, I would go with the police one.
You think that would be more likely?
That would be more likely, I think, if we're talking from the beginning of basketball season.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I posted this on Facebook, but I was secretly... Okay, let me rephrase this. If the knife comes back with somebody else's blood on it, would that be the greatest plot twist ever in the history of the world?
Didn't see that one coming, did you?
No. It would be unbelievable. So, oh, side note, we're already off topic. If you aren't watching The People vs. OJ, I don't know what you're doing on your Tuesday nights. That is amazing. Like, we're all pretty much like 99% sure that OJ did it. And at the time, like, there was the whole race relations and like DNA testing was so new and everything. But watching this, I respect Johnny Cochran and his amazing lawyer abilities. At some point, you just have to admire someone just being absolutely excellent at their job. And that's just me being Jim Harbaugh right now.
Just the bitter old man in the corner.
Yeah, just watching somebody do traffic signaling. So, but Oregon gets a first-round bye in the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah, it's pretty astonishing. I remember back to when the first time I saw them projected as a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament, and I was like, "What?" They were just like quietly so good, and I was like, "No, that they won't be able to maintain that." And then they lost those 2 games in a row, and I was like, "Ah, okay, here it is.
The other shoe hath fallen."
Here's the unraveling I was waiting for.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of put that behind them and kept on rolling. So here's the question I want to pose.
Okay.
Is, and this may be a long shot, so we've got one more regular season game, and then we've got the Pac-12 tournament.
Uh-huh.
If Oregon wins out, if they win every game on the rest of their schedule before the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. what seed do you give them?
If they win out, 2.
If they win out, 2 seed.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
it's so crazy to like see the rankings and then see like, you know, you've got like Villanova and North Carolina and then Oregon, and yeah, you go way down the rankings and you've got Duke and Kentucky, and it's like, wow. Just wow.
Okay, so is Dana Altman, I think Dana Altman's like Mark Helfrich, where it's like he isn't the best coach in the country. Like, mm-hmm, Nick Saban is just next level. I swear there's like six great coaches in the SEC who have gotten fired because they couldn't beat Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? But Helfrich's thing is that he is the most efficient at like dollars per win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for every win, Helfrich is the cheapest, or excuse me, most affordable.
Best value in college football.
Yeah, exactly.
So is Dana Altman the best value in college basketball?
Yeah. He has to be.
He's got to be.
He has to be. Because Calipari just gets paid a ton.
They don't bring in enough fans to watch these games to pay him enough.
Yeah. Well, you know who think, or what I think is the best coaching job in the country for college basketball?
What's that?
Texas.
Really?
Yeah, you have the like the most valuable athletic department in the country.
Mm-hmm, true.
So you have all these resources. You're at the ultimate football school. Nobody cares about the basketball team. You could go, nope, like they're number 23 right now. I doubt anybody in their fan base really knows that.
Yeah.
Like, just keep hitting, like, a few 500s. Just be Jeff Fisher at the St. Louis Rams, and you're going to be fine.
Just skate under the radar.
Yeah. Just keep winning enough to keep your job.
Yeah.
And it's easy. You have the most assets of any, like, team ever. You are in Texas, which just, by sheer numbers, has a ton of basketball players. Might not be a huge hotbed, but you got a lot of people to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin is a great place to live.
It is. It was, in fact, I think it was just ranked like the number two place to live in the country.
Really?
Yeah. Some new ranking system came out, which I feel like comes out every day.
The number of scientifically proven cities that are most popular for young people to move to, I think there's five different number ones.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, these are facts. Can't really argue with them. So four of you are wrong, or maybe all five, and you guys just don't even have the right one. So the teams above Oregon right now in the, mm-hmm, AP top 25, because let's be real about the coaches poll, nobody is filling that out as a coach.
Nobody pays attention.
Kansas
there.
Michigan State, Villanova are like probably gonna be top four. Mm-hmm. So it's Kansas, Michigan State, Villanova, oh, Virginia, Xavier, Oklahoma, Miami of Florida, North Carolina, and Oregon. Teams below Oregon: Louisville, Indiana, Maryland, Duke, Kentucky. What is going on right now?
What is happening in college basketball? Yeah, if you told me that Oregon would be a top 10 team and Kentucky would be struggling to stay in the top 25, I would just assume that you're drunk.
Or like Robin Williams from Jumanji. What year is it?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so North Carolina, Miami, and Virginia are all in the same conference.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, I'm not a bracketologist. If this were college football, I'd be able to be like, here's what happens in all these scenarios. I don't know if Oregon wins the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah.
They have to be in the top eight because you have four, you have three ACC teams.
Yeah, so
someone has to fall below Oregon. and Miami and North Carolina are directly above Oregon.
Yeah,
so it's got to be number two.
So let's propel Oregon up to seven, mm-hmm. just for argument's sake. And then
that would have us against Michigan State if everybody wins out.
Yeah.
God, I hate those guys. It just, how does this keep happening?
They're just like, you're never going to get us.
Yeah, exactly. You know what's crazy? Because at the beginning of the year, we were like, okay, it's basketball season. Like, we got all these guys. Like, do we really know anything about them? And then we kind of, like, talked about it for a couple hours. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'm actually really excited for this team. This is unbelievable. Like, I'm blown away. Like, because of the outside reasons, I hadn't been able to, like, watch games for a couple weeks. And then all of a sudden, I was like, wait, what is happening right now? They're, like, number 13?
Yeah, it's just so secretly good. Yeah. And it's, like, Dylan Brooks is a scoring machine. It seems like he's routinely dropping 20, 25 points a night.
Yes.
Chris Boucher blocks everything that comes near him.
Like T-Rob.
Yeah, he has. So here's the top guys before, not counting Chris Boucher. If you take him out of the equation, the top guys on Oregon in blocks per game are Jordan Bell at 1.6 blocks.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got Dylan Brooks and Elgin Cook, who are both averaging less than half a block a game.
Uh-huh.
And then Chris Boucher is averaging 3.2 blocks a game.
It's a block party.
It's what happens when Oregon finally gets a guy with some height down there.
Yeah, even though we still don't have like a true center, I guess.
Yeah.
My King DeGlory center.
He's the closest thing we'll get.
I mean, it's not like we have 6'8 Marty Lewin in playing center, but it's like, why do we put anybody in the paint at that time? Just three balls. The Tuan Porter look, that would be great. It seems like, is there anybody that really stands out on a game-to-game basis that's like always out, like Brooks?
I mean, Dylan Brooks is the guy who, he rarely ever has like a bad night. I'm looking over his game log, and his worst game in the past month was when he scored 10 against Colorado. And before that, the game against Cal back in January in Eugene was when he scored like 4 points that night. It shot like 2 of 10. But everything since then, he's like, it's like 15 points, 21, 21, 14, 25, 24, 18, 10, 30. Like, it's always double digits every night. So he's just a scoring machine.
Yeah. And it seems like I'll watch games and it's like, oh, Cook's making a play. Boucher mm-hmm. is killing it right now. Dorsey is killing it right now. It right. seems like Brooks may be the go-to, but there's always one to two other people who really show up in every game.
Yeah. I think that's the thing about this team is that there's just like there's so much depth, and it's so like, yeah, Dylan Brooks leads the way, but everyone else is just making great plays and like chipping in these little ways, and it's just a well-rounded team.
Yeah. And now Oregon's got one more game this season at USC, which is tomorrow. We're recording this on Friday evening, so I'm probably just going to put it out tonight at some point. Tipping off against USC at 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 network. Oregon's already got the top spot locked down in the conference. So, but it's still meaningful in terms of getting the number two seed. Yeah, we still have to get the number two seed. I mean,
yes.
If we lose this game, it's up in the air.
It could be, I mean, you know, hovering at that 2-3 seed mark, but lock it up, get the 2 seed. They can't really go any higher. I think that's the ceiling there. So,
yeah. And USC is 20-10 with it'd be Arizona in quadruple overtime. They've lost 5 of their last 7. So they lost at Arizona State, at Arizona, beat Colorado at home, lost to Utah at home, lost at Stanford, lost at Cal, beat Oregon State at home. I still think this will be a good game. I'm watching it.
That'll be exciting.
I'm going to watch it. I'm psyched. This team is good. Love watching it. What is going on with these lack of sellouts, though?
It's been, like, it blows my mind. Like, you have a top 10 team in the country. They are, record-wise, it's one of the best teams in school history. And you have to beg your fans to come to the last home game of the year. Like, every single game.
On TV, they said it was a sellout.
They did. I think they got it to a sellout, but it was like...
the definition of the word.
Like, 11th hour sellout. Maybe they counted the food service employees as part of the crowd.
Classic.
You know.
Classic Red Sox move. As a Red Sox fan.
And so, I don't get it. Like, I get that a lot of the games are inconveniently timed, you know, like Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. Yeah, if I worked a 9-to-5 job, I probably wouldn't be rushing to get to the game either.
I wouldn't be if I can just watch it on TV.
But I mean, even the weekend games, they're having to beg people to come, and they're still not getting sellouts, and it's just, I don't know. It's not a very intimidating atmosphere.
I have so many marketing ideas for them. Just like why aren't they just marketing like the weekday games as like huge ones for the local community?
Yeah.
Just like local community. You can like when they dropped ticket prices down a ton for like a few games, they sold out easy.
Oh yeah. I remember when they did a I think it was like at the end of the season last year.
Yes.
For like the Utah game or something. They made the entire arena, I think it was like $16 for tickets. And the place was packed.
Yeah. And they're just like, why not just do that? Just sell season tickets at those prices. Like the Blazers, they have like the Star Games, and you can buy like tickets for all of those. Or like you can get like all of the Saturday games. And there's like different packages of like season tickets you can get, basically. Like, I don't know, but it seems just like there's no reason for to be struggling to get attendance. Like, I'm not even talking like filling it up. I'm just saying in general, there's just like not that many people going. So, and I think we already talked about this at the beginning of the year, but there's like zero brand identity with this team.
Oh yeah.
It's like Oregon basketball. It's like, what does that mean? Nobody knows. If anything, it's just like you come into this season not knowing that many people, and then you come out and they're in the Sweet 16 every year.
Yeah, exactly.
And nobody knows how it happened exactly.
They're just such a quietly good team. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah. So, man, athletic department, just hit me up. I have so many ideas. I'm not just going to put them all down here. I would like to point out that Oregon has not lost a game since The Life of Pablo came out.
Coincidence? I think not.
I think not. Life of Pablo comes out, Oregon starts winning. You know?
Look at that.
If only the game against Stanford had been a few hours later when Life of Pablo came out, they would have won. Easy.
Everything would have been alright.
Not even close. It would have just been easy. Do we want to transition now to NFL Combine?
Let's do it.
Alright, so we had 5 players at the NFL Combine. We had Braylon Addison, Byron Marshall, Vernon Adams, DeForest Buckner, and Tyler Johnstone.
Mm-hmm.
So with the NFL Combine, there's a ton of people that get invited, like a lot. But it's not always the people at the top of the draft. Basically, teams will provide like lists of people that they want to see, and when there's a huge overlap of different teams, like a lot of teams want to check out a few people, that's the group that determines it. Because right. Byron Marshall is projected to be like a fringe roster guy. Like he'll probably mm-hmm. be on the practice roster unless he like really shines on special teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's there along with like DeForest Buckner, who's projected to be like a top five pick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we see people like Vernon Adams and stuff there. Let's just go through each player individually.
Yeah, so
Vernon Adams measured in at 5'11", which is taller than I thought he would.
Mm-hmm.
He does not look 5'11".
I think my favorite thing was seeing how they're like, oh, this is what this guy measured in at. Look at that. His college media guy lists him at 3 inches taller.
List him at 6'2"?
Well, I'm not Oregon specifically, but there were some players, I forget who exactly it was, but there were some players that they measured him at the combine and they were like a good 3 inches shorter than what they had been advertised as in college. Very common practice.
I'm looking up this one guy just to see what this was, because we heard about him all year. Okay, never mind. That was fair. Brock Osweiler measured in at 6'7", when all year we heard he was 6'8". Negligible. Not even going to be mad about it. I think my favorite things are seeing like the 40 times that come in. Like if you look at like the Florida football like 40 record, it's like all people who look like they could break the sound barrier.
Yeah.
Like there's multiple like 4.2s. There's like I don't think you even make the top 10 unless you run a 4.32 or less. And then they all go into the combine and run like 4.4s.
Of course.
I think my favorite one, I'm just gonna look this guy up so I don't get the 40 time wrong. Okay, so let's see if you can guess who this is. This player, we were told he ran a 4.2940 when he was in college. He played Oregon multiple times. At the combine, he ran a 4.59. Which is 0.02 of a second faster than Blaine Gabbert and 0.06 of a second faster than Christian Ponder. Name that player. He played Oregon multiple times, so he's in conference.
And let's see here. A 4.59. Oh.
Meanwhile, we were told.
I'm going to go was a 4. Jared 2. Goff?
No.
Jared Goff?
Jake Locker.
Jake Locker, oh my.
Yeah, they're saying the conditioning coach was like, he ran a 4.2940. And it's like, look, he is athletic, but don't pull out this 4.29. We all know that's a lie.
We all know he just can't move that fast.
Yeah, it's like, is he athletic? Yes, he plays very fast. I've watched games. But it's like 4.29. It's like, God, no, it's not 4.29. Runs a 4.59. There was no hiding at the combine. Your media guide or whatever that says you're 6'3", 240 pounds, and you run like a 4.440, I'll see you at 6'1", 225 pounds, running a 4.7. It's combine math. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
How ridiculous. It's almost like these strength and conditioning coaches don't know that they're going to be like actually tested on this stuff. But then again, at that point, you're trying to like sell the player at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So no one's ever going to go back and be like, oh, but you said this. No one's going to call them out on that. So, all right, back to Vernon Adams. 5'11", 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So he said he gained 15 pounds from the end of the season. Which makes sense, honestly, because you have, like, training and working out for this is now your full-time job.
Right.
And there's really no illusions or there's really no, like, hint, hint, wink, wink, we have classes.
Yeah.
Because I didn't come to play school. So he ran and he's drawing comparisons to Russell Wilson, who, mm-hmm. which isn't really fair because Russell Wilson is more athletic. Even though he's infinitely more annoying. Like, dude, what is your problem? You're going out Sierra.
be happy, man.
Yeah, so he ran a 4.8340, which is not good. But then he's a quarterback, and that wasn't really his strength anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So he ran, like, the most important things for him are going to be, like, the shuttle and three cone drills and everything.
Yeah.
So for the – in the three cone drill, he was the top performer.
Nice.
Right. That's, like, the most important thing. I mean, that matches up with his skill set. Like, that's mm-hmm. his strength.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that would be the one he excels at. So he's doing everything he's supposed to. So, I mean, 40-yard dash, it's really not that important unless you're fully dependent on speed.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 29.5-inch vert, 114-inch broad jump. Whatever. The most important thing is basically just that he excelled the drill he needed to. Everyone's giving him a ton of praise, and justifiably, the biggest knock on him is his size. Justifiably.
Oh, of course. It's the classic undersized argument.
Yeah, and it's so much so a little undersized that it's kind of like, I don't even know if that's like... He is the ultimate guy you would want on a practice roster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm an NFL team, I want him on a practice roster because he is so accurate. He's so quick. I mean, if you have a guy who his only knock is really his size, that's a great guy to have in your roster when you're just doing, like, 7-on-7s of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, like, I think the whole size thing is just not a valid argument. I think he could be undersized and still be successful.
Okay, so one of the guys that was... Okay, let's look at Russell Wilson real fast. Russell Wilson is 5'11".
Look at that.
Okay. Okay, so fair. So I take that back. I take it back. Russell Wilson was slightly different, though. He had a much better record over the course of his career. In mm-hmm. terms of, like, competition.
Right.
So, and Oregon still gets knocked for it being a system and everything. It's like, okay, if it's a system that just produces a monster amount of points, why isn't everybody running the system? Riddle me that. Saban.
Classic system quarterback argument.
Classic system quarterback. And then here's a counter to that. Geno Smith. Fair. I don't have an answer for that.
Don't know what to do.
Don't know. You got me there. And Drew Brees is like the other guy who is just like his biggest concern. He's 6 foot.
Mm-hmm.
His biggest concern was at San Diego was his height, and then he went to New Orleans and everything was fine. So could he make it? I wouldn't. If I was a GM, I would not put a draft pick on him. I would not put a draft pick on him.
On Vernon Adams?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think one. I don't think one season at. Not even one, like, complete season either.
Yeah.
Is enough to say, like, for me as an NFL GM, being like, okay, this guy is going to be a good next level quarterback for us. I don't know. I'm with you. I think he's he might go late, but he might go late for someone who's like, yeah, we got some room at the quarterback position. Let's give him a shot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to convince everybody. You just have mm-hmm. to convince one.
Right.
The Tim Tebow story. Because no one liked him except for the Broncos. Who has more playoff wins than Andy Dalton.
Yeah, he provided us that one magical postseason. And
yes. Yes. Okay, so... yeah, he will be on a roster, whether it's practice. He's going to be in training camp. He's going to be on a practice roster. Firmly believe that. Let's go to DeForest Buckner.
With the biggest hands in combine history?
Yeah, 11 3/4 inches. He measures in at 6'7", 291 pounds.
He's a man. Yeah, if you have a ruler sitting around, or a Subway footlong sandwich, just use those as your reference point for how big his damn hands are. And
although, oh my god, I don't know. Subway. Oh my god. Although they're even longer than Subway's footlongs, because Subway footlongs are not actually a footlong.
Blasphemy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's like that's kind of a cool fun fact a little bit, but I don't think it actually matters.
No, it does not matter for a defensive end. His arm lengths are 34 3/8 inch.
So I think the arm length is a little bit more important, because you can get your, you know,
for a defense, for alignment, extremely important.
Yeah, you know, use it to swim around the offensive lineman, get your hand up, block something.
Yeah,
bigger wingspan, that comes in handy.
Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of sucks for him, because, like, one of the only real knocks on him, well, I mean, A, he plays super high.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's one of my beefs I always had as a super prolific guy who watches the games often with junk food in front of me. Is he just played so high. And granted, Oregon played, like, a two-gap. At the time, that really did him a disservice in terms of statistics and everything.
Yeah.
He's played so high. And that's not going to work when he's going against, like, people who get paid to block people. It's just really unfortunate that in our system, he wasn't really able to go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was constantly two-gapping. He could never just, like, shoot a gap. His combine numbers, see, but this is the thing where the combine numbers don't exactly pan out all the time. Like, his 40 dash was 5.05, vert was 32,
mm-hmm.
broad jump was 116, 3-cone drill was 7.51 seconds. Wow, Vernon ran at 3 seconds faster. 20 yard shuttle was a 4.47. Like, his physical statistics mm-hmm. are really impressive. And he's one of those guys where you can see the immense amount of talent he has. And it's like the talent level that you can't coach, but you can coach him the other stuff.
Right.
To maximize it. So the other, wow. An NFL regional scout said his biggest comparable is Calais Campbell or Eric Armstead. But I think he's more talented coming out than either of those guys. I think he's twice the player Armstead was coming out.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Meanwhile, Armstead went 15th overall to the San Francisco 49ers last year. So, he's going to go really high. He's one of those guys too where it's he could play every position, I think, except a 3-4 defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could be the lighter of the two 4-3 defensive tackles. I think he could play both in an end position in the 3-4 and the 4-3. So that versatility is really going to go well for him. Like, basically, he's not limited based on the scheme that somebody's running.
Right.
So, I think that's a huge plus for him. Let me pull up some more stats about this. I need more stats.
More numbers.
More numbers. M-O-A-R. Okay, so Todd McShay has him going third to the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, I've heard Buckner going third to the Chargers is like a trendy spot, just because what I've heard is the whole
Melvin Ingram thing is with
with Joey Bosa from Ohio State being like the other guy that they could take. I've heard that Buckner is like a better fit for their system.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like the thing you have to evaluate. Maybe you have a guy who might be like the better athlete or the better player overall, like a higher rated player, but you've also got to think of like what's going to be the best fit for you. It's like if you did a reverse draft from college or from the NFL into college, like who would Oregon pick as their quarterback? Would they pick like a Peyton Manning, or would they pick like, you know, Michael Vick in his prime?
Oh, Michael Vick.
You know, exactly. It's like that type of thing where it's like, okay, this other guy might be the better player, but this guy is going to be the better fit. So let's go smart. Let's go with this guy. Let's cross our fingers that it actually pans out.
Which is why teams have to be so careful signing free agents.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, A, there's a reason why they're a free agent. Because what they were asking for was deemed to be more than the team thought they were worth. So that's one reason why, for the most part, that happens like 90% of the time. The other time, they're just out of salary cap space. And the other reason is they might have been playing in an entirely different system their whole time in the pros. So, Joey Bosa, according to Mel Kiper, is going to go to San Diego. Buckner will be going to, who's the fourth pick? Dallas. Which is awful. That's terrifying. I don't want him anywhere near that program. The Cowboys are such a mess right now. I really feel bad for whatever like fresh out of college person whose dad knows like Jerry Jones is not working social media.
We want our guys to be able to go have nice things.
Yeah. So please, Tennessee, draft a tackle, please, please, pretty please. I really want him to make it out of the next season.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So that's DeForest Buckner. Let's go to Tyler Johnstone now. Where is his page? There he is.
We found.
There he is. So, for example, Buckner had a grade of like over 7. Adams had a grade of like 4.85. Tyler Johnstone has a grade of 4.85.
Nice.
Good for him. Suffered a knee injury in the Alamo Bowl. So, that's... I don't think people will take ACL surgery is that seriously anymore, because the technology on it is just so unbelievable now.
Oh yeah, it's like I remember when it used to be a career-ending injury.
Yeah.
And now you're just like, yeah, we'll see you next year.
Yeah. Or Braylon Adams, who came back in like 7 months.
Yeah.
And if you go to Germany, it's like 2 months. Nothing weird happens over there. So he was first team All Pac-12 last year. He's 6'5", measuring at 301 pounds. His 40 was 5.21, which, why they have linemen run the 40-yard dash is beyond me. Other than it just being really funny to watch.
Yeah, it's pure entertainment. It's just funny.
You know the photo of Mount Cody running the 40?
Mm-hmm.
That is bad.
That's why photography exists in this world.
Yeah. So he benched 24 times on the bench. The bench press is maybe the most overrated statistic in the combine.
Yeah.
Like, it simply does not matter that much.
It's like all the frat dudes trying to outbench each other in the rec center.
Yeah. It's like, once you hit, like, 16, you're fine. Because the bench press is not an account of how strong you are. It's an assessment of your physical endurance.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know how easy it is to bench 225 if you just spend, like, a month on it? It's really easy to bench 225.
Yeah.
So, but once you hit, like, more than 15 times, it's a complete endurance thing. Like, once you hit over 10 reps, that's endurance. So, like, Steven Paella doing, like, 50, that's cool. I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly overrated. Like, that number does not mean that much to me. His three cone drill was the top performer, 7.31.
There you go.
Which is big for a tackle. That's huge. That's really important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's obviously played fantastic. He's extremely athletic, which is pretty much the norm for Oregon linemen.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Like, at the strength and conditioning warm-ups, it looks like a gymnastics thing. Having gone through it many times, there's, like, parts where you're, like, doing somersaults over people and, like, messing with, like, the gym bars and everything where you, like, pull yourself vertically. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, bullets over bowling balls. So, NFL comparison. Tyler Palumbus. Let's see, does it say where he's projected to go on here? Okay, so it doesn't say on that page. We obviously do a lot of prep for this podcast beforehand.
We do a lot of research.
There's actually a lot of times that we're like, oh, what about this? And then I end up just Googling it real fast.
Yeah. It's what it's there for.
Exactly. Where does this projection happen? He's ranked as the 27th best player at his position. So, undrafted.
Yeah. But so, there's 27 other linemen in front of him.
27 other offensive tackles. Oh, offensive tackle is like a really valuable position. He's going to find a spot somewhere. He was first team all Pac-12. Super athletic. You know how many athletic offensive tackles there are? Not many.
Not many.
Not many.
Not many.
Byron Marshall. Wide receiver. He's ranked as like the 45th based on a lot of people. Let me find his NFL draft, because I pulled up pages and I didn't like any of these pages. He only did the bench press 17 times.
he just benched some weights and bounced.
Yeah. See, I don't see. He's 5'9", which isn't that important though when you're a wide receiver. He's 200 pounds. He can play a lot of different roles. You can play receiver. You can give him some touches on swing passes. He can block. Probably a great special teams player. He is like, he's like a Julian Edelman, where he can play like a lot of different roles, or like mm-hmm. a Danny Woodhead type,
right?
Where it's like he's not great at anything, but he's good at a lot of different things.
Yeah, he could fit in a team somewhere that needs kind of one of those types of players that. Just like, hey, we'll place you here, we'll place you there, see what you can do.
Yeah. So, I mean, this draft is super deep on mm-hmm. receivers, so he's going to be an undrafted free agent. But I think he'll find a sticking point somewhere. So, I mean, he's really good.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know who else was an undrafted free agent? Arian Foster.
Oh, yeah. He's also a vegan.
So I was just saying, you know, just because you go undrafted doesn't mean it's the end of the world.
Right. Exactly. I think Josh Norman was undrafted, too.
There's some good guys that come out of, you know, can, we'll see what happens with them.
Yes. It'll be exciting. He's going to find a spot somewhere. Braylon Addison. 5'9", 197 pounds. Ran a 4.66 40. Wow, that is not good. I thought I misread that. I thought it was going to be 4.56. 4.66. That is, he plays way faster than that.
Oh, yeah.
How is that even correct? You're at 13 on the bench press, which is virtually a non-issue as wide receiver. 34.5-inch for 116-inch broad jump. His three cone was 6.95, which is... What is going on? What is he doing?
What happened to him?
Yeah, seriously. That's, like, not that much faster than Tyler Johnstone and DeForest Buckner. Apparently, he is more of an athlete in space than a route runner, which, I mean, I agree with when you're comparing it to NFL players.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else is on here. He's going to be, I think he's like a better version of Byron Marshall in the NFL. Like a quicker version. Like just getting touches, but I don't think he can pass protect. He's probably going to be a roster spot too, I think. His NFL comparison is Josh Huff, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Darren Carrington is going to be the first receiver in a long time where you're like, he is an NFL receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Because Darren Carrington makes plays, he's an absolute baller. You don't have
and he's always open.
He's always open. I don't understand. I just don't get it. It's just so weird. I just don't understand. But then, yeah, I think Devin Allen will be able to get a spot because he's pretty tall. He's relatively tall. He breaks 6 feet. But, like, Tony Brooks James, like, just looking down the line, like, Taj Griffin, he's got to be an amazing receiver and kick returner because, like, mm-hmm. DeAnthony Thomas is not getting a ton of looks in the NFL. Although, they're totally different players, to be honest, personality-wise. Tony Brooks James is going to have a problem in the NFL. Kirk Merritt, I think, is going to be good. Like, some of these receivers coming in now
mm-hmm.
are pretty big, but when you got guys like Braylon Addison, they can excel in college. But when it comes to matching up in the NFL and that style of play and everything, it gets a lot tougher. And that's because NFL, everything, every player is so similar to each other. Like, the gap between your good player and your average player is not that far apart.
Right.
So it's all situational stuff. You won't find huge deficiencies at like a couple of positions like you see in college.
Yeah, it's so. Like, you know, in the NFL, it's like everyone is the best of the best. And so even your worst wide receiver on the team, it's not that much of a gap.
Right, exactly. And so it's stuff too where it's like, like, where if... Here's an example with the Cardinals that I saw a lot. So the Cardinals have five, like, amazing defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
Teams would scheme to run, like, a lot of jumbo sets against them to keep as many of the defensive backs off the field. And that's, like, the kind of level of, like, specificity it gets down to. Or, like, we see, like, one player lines up like this so we can motion a receiver over to crack in, like, these specific situations.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just so specific. There's so much game plan that goes into it. Like, sometimes fake field goals, like the Seahawks did this. They faked a field goal because they saw one player was lined up in protection. And they noticed that on kick field goal block attempts, he would always get out of alignment, and so whenever they saw him in, they knew they were gonna fake it and throw a pass. And he was like the third guy in from the line. Like, it's something that nobody would look for unless you're an NFL coach with tons of time on your hands. So that's Braylon Addison. That's all of them. We went through all of them.
Got them all?
Okay, so we got of these guys at the top, Todd McShay. I like him more than Mel Kiper. Tennessee Titans, number one overall draft pick. They really should trade down. They can't do that in mock drafts. They're like Mel Kiper and Todd McShay can't be like, oh, we're going to...
Like, they have to pick someone.
They have to pick that spot, assuming that team stays there.
Yeah.
So the Tennessee Titans, obviously going to draft an offensive tackle. That is their biggest need. Obviously, if you watched the games last year, it was bad. Mm-hmm. Like, their offensive line was bad. Like, Cleveland was getting pressure rushing three guys against five. Like, there's no conceivable way that should ever happen as an NFL team. There's three offensive tackles at the top. There's Laremy Tunsil, who's an offensive tackle out of Mississippi. He's like the best. He's like top tier, kind of by himself. Shortly below that, you have Ronnie Stanley, who's out of Notre Dame. And then you have another guy, what's his name? Jake Conklin, who's out of Michigan State. So all three of those, according to Todd McShay, and there's Taylor Decker out of Ohio State, who's projected to go 16th.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four guys in that top, like, 16 that I think because honestly, the Titans just need a lot of help on offense. So I think it might make the most sense for them to trade out of that spot. See if you can find somebody dumb like Washington, who will trade away like their entire draft to get somebody that they totally don't need. Because if this team is able to just trade down for a first round, get a couple second rounders and like a couple third rounders, that's huge. You can get like decent receivers, you can get a guard and a tackle, like a really good tackle, bunch of good guards. Like, you can just add so much depth everywhere because Tennessee's got a lot of holes. But their coach is like, you know, sometimes you can't tell if he's just saying this to say this, but he's like, people are like, what's your biggest need this offseason? And he's like, get Mario to help.
Yeah.
The first thing is, we need to keep him safe. He used that word in an interview. We need to keep him safe.
He needs a safe space.
Yeah. It's like, I wonder if he gets workman's comp. So he's projected, the Tennessee Titans in this example are projected to get Laremy Tunsil, who's kind of like by himself. What might be beneficial, see, I don't even know if the Cleveland Browns are that dumb anymore, because the Cleveland Browns basically turned over their entire front office. Like, their director of I forget what the exact name is. It's like development or personnel, is a former Mets guy.
Interesting.
He was in baseball for this. So, yeah. Okay, so the Browns hire Mets Paul DePodesta, Chief Strategy Officer. So, he is Vice President of Football Operations. Oh, he's above that person. So basically, the Browns just did like a full sweep of everything. I actually think that bringing in a baseball guy is a really good move.
Yeah.
Because baseball is a sport that's like so ingrained in numbers and everything. Like, that's one sport where you're like, statistics, you guys got this down. Like, almost don't need to watch the games anymore.
Oh, exactly. It's all just all numbers.
All stats. Football is the exact opposite of that. Like, Bill Connolly at Football Study Hall and the guys at Football Outsiders, all tremendous. But there is so much that numbers can't explain. And even worse than that is some teams are even like, no, numbers don't mean anything. Well, actually, it's statistically shown that there's a correlation between that it's a good predictor. So these football teams like don't even bother with it. And the Cleveland Browns are like the kings of like, what are you doing right now? So mm-hmm. I think bringing in an outsider who is so stooped in numbers, and more importantly, doesn't have all these like dogmas surrounding football and everything. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many like... For example, somebody asked... A team asked a player at the Combine if he liked men.
Yeah, it's just one of the many... I guess it's like Combine tradition to just get asked the most ridiculous questions.
Like... Name another workplace environment where you can ask someone their sexual orientation.
Yeah. And they like the owner was like, oh yeah, we addressed it and we say we don't stand for it, and it's like okay, that's it.
It's
like
just,
Jesus.
Hearing some of these questions and like the thought process behind some of these teams, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like it's like, what are you guys doing? So, although my strength has really been knowing which players aren't going to pan out. That's always been my go-to thing. It's like, this guy will not succeed. I'm always right on that. Like, this guy will not do anything.
The teams need to hire you on as a consultant.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you who not to draft. Like, I won't tell you who's going to be, like, the Pro Bowler, but I will tell you
who the guy to stay
away from. Not waste your first-round draft pick on. You will not draft a bad player. I'm not going to tell you who the great players are, but I'm going to tell you who you're going to waste a draft pick on.
Some would even say that would be more valuable.
Right, exactly. Carson Wentz. Nope.
Not a good one.
Nope. All this first round is like really good. Okay, let's just go through this. Okay, so... Laramie Tunsil, Tennessee. Carson Wentz, who's the quarterback from North Dakota State, is going to go to the Cleveland Browns. Sorry, Carson. It's really been Carson and Goff at the Combine who are going like against each other.
So yeah, Carson Wentz, at first I heard it was Goff, like that was going to be the lock for the number two pick, but now it's, I keep hearing Wentz.
Yeah. I'd rather have Goff, honestly. Yeah, so get this. They're like, this is legit from Todd McShay. Wentz has better athleticism, which is, okay, fair. I don't think it's that important to, like, just jump somebody. And bigger hands to grip the ball in bad weather. He played indoors his entire career.
Yeah.
Goff has been outside for his whole career. He played in terrible weather. So, I mean, I think Goff is a much better deal.
I would go for Goff.
Buckner to the Chargers, Bosa to the Cowboys, Jalen Ramsey to the Jaguars. I like Hargreaves III more.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore Ravens get Ronnie Stanley, Goff to the 49ers. Oh, Chip gets a Goff. Miles Jack goes to the Dolphins. That's going to be a good fit. Vernon Hargreaves to the Bucks, Ezekiel Elliott to the Giants. That is way too high. That is way too high. There is zero reason to draft for a running back in the first round anymore. Absolutely zero. Shaq Lawson to the Bears. A'shaun Robertson to the Saints. Jake Conklin going to the Eagles. I have really no preference for the Eagles at all anymore. Eli Apple, CB from Ohio State, going to the Raiders. Laquon Treadwell to the Rams. Taylor Decker, offensive tackle from Ohio State, to the Lions. Ohio State offensive linebacker. Outside linebacker. Darren Lee going to the Falcons. Leonard Floyd, offensive linebacker. Outside linebacker to the Colts. What other Pac-12 guys are on here in this first round? So many Buckeyes. Reggie Ragland, inside linebacker, going to the Packers. Go Pack, go. Eddie Lacy's on the P90X vibe. It looks great. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and the Patriots don't get a first-round draft pick. So that's the 31.
There it is.
I get so fired up for the draft. It's so pointless, though.
it's so exciting, and then it's just like, okay, there was our one taste of football until like August.
Yeah, exactly. So the NFL is so good though at using like the whole calendar. Like the Super Bowl was like a month ago, a little over a month ago, and we just had like the combine. And like in another month, it's going to be the draft, and then another month it's OTAs, and then another month they show up to training camp, and then in another month is the season.
It's so perfectly spaced out.
They're so smart about planning the season, but not doing anything else. So we talked about basketball. We talked about football. I'm excited for the spring game.
It should be a good one.
Excited to see Dakota. I'm pumped.
Yeah, we get to see our one-year quarterback at the spring game this year.
Yep, and then hopefully his backup, Travis Johnson. Travis, please win the backup QB spot. I'm literally praying right now. So, all right, that covers it.
That should do it.
Yeah, so next week we'll be talking about the Pac-12 conference championships in basketball.
The conference of champions. Have you ever been to a volcano?
Who's the guy that Bill Walton always calls Snoop Dogg?
Dwayne Benjamin. Yeah.
God. He is so good. He talks about so many different things. People are like, I hate Bill Walton's shtick. It's like, no, it is hilarious. I sometimes just have him on in the background. It's not even really a shtick. It's just him actually just talking. Like, they just put a mic in front of him.
It's just a national treasure.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for us at Sling and Quack. You know, we only went like a little over an hour today.
Not bad. A lot
of high quality quack. It's not watered down. There's no baking soda in it. Just straight quack.
Just pure quack.
Pure quack. All right, that'll do it for us. We'll see you guys next week. And I swear, we will see you guys next week. Bye.